Thank you for listening to the Faith Radio Mornings podcast. Enjoy the conversation.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings.
Let it rise.
I hope you're feeling good this morning. It is a happy good news day. Today is Thursday, March 16th, which makes it 3/16/17. So we're calling that happy good news day. Let's go back to our favorite 3:16 verse, which comes from John. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have everlasting life. So happy good news day, 3:16. Good time to refresh that verse from memory, because I'm sure everyone listening has that memorized, right? And if you don't, it's a good day to start. John 3:16. Another thing that's coming up tomorrow is would be 3:17, which in my recollection makes it St. Patrick's Day. And I just wonder how many out there look for opportunities on days like St. Patrick's Day to engage in conversation about the truth of this evangelist that we call St. Patrick. I mean, do we even know much about him ourselves? I guess we can always play dumb, which for me can be surprisingly easy. I mean, I can say things like, I didn't even know he wasn't even Irish. Did you know he was an evangelist that spent his life sharing his faith in Jesus? And did you know that St. Patrick's Day is the day honoring his death? So here's a couple of things I know about him. And we can have this conversation with people because it can actually lead us to a conversation about our faith. Patrick isn't really a saint with a capital S because he was never officially canonized by Rome. And Patrick really couldn't have driven out the snakes out of Ireland because there were never any snakes there to begin with. Although I think I have one in my basement behind the furnace, so I'd like help with that. And he wasn't the first evangelist to Ireland. Palladius was sent there in 431, and that was about 5 years before Patrick went. And Patrick isn't even Irish. He's from now what's an area called Dumbarton, Scotland, but he was British Roman. So he was kind of this Roman evangelist. He was about 16 in the year 405 when he was captured in a raid and became a slave, and was tending sheep at his master's estate for about, I think, about 6 years in Ireland. And then in his mid-40s, he returned to Ireland. Palladius was no longer there, so he figured out that the best thing to do would be try to go to the masters of the clan system. There was a clan system there, and Milchow was a chieftain, so he converted him, and then he figured if I convert the chief, they'll convert the clans, and apparently that's kind of the way it worked. So it's, he was obviously not responsible for converting the island, but Patrick was very successful. He made missionary journeys all over Ireland. But I don't know if we really even know the story very well, and it actually makes for engaging conversation with people to say, I didn't even know St. Patrick wasn't even Irish. Because it does give us yet another opportunity to share our faith. And if you know anything more about him as we think about the next 2 days, and if you can think of ways in which you can use this opportunity to engage in conversation that might lead to a conversation about Christ, let's take advantage of these opportunities. Give us a call at 1-877-933-2484. If you're good at doing this, if you're good at looking for opportunities to engage people in conversations when we have opportunities like this, all right? Love to hear from you. It is 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to talk to Matt Sorens from World Relief and some of the concerns about the travel ban and the refugees. So be back in just a minute. Nine minutes after the hour, good morning, Bill Arnold here. I would say the refugee crisis may be the greatest geopolitical issue of our time. And how do we even begin to respond to something so gigantic, complex? That's why I called Matt Sorens. He's on the line from World Relief. Matt, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And happy Good News Day. As you know, today is March 16th, so 3:16. There you go. Plug that in.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't thought about that.
Well, that's why I told you. Now you can think about it. Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, that's very true.
All right, we've got new concerns with the White House revising its very controversial travel ban. How is that going to affect things?
Yeah, well, it's been a very quickly changing dynamic. Even yesterday, there was a federal judge that put parts of that second executive order on a temporary hold. So it's been a lot of work even just to keep up with what's happening.
Yeah.
But the biggest impact of this executive order on refugees is actually not affected by any of these court decisions, and that's that the number of refugees to be allowed into the United States this year, this fiscal year, went down from 110,000 to 50,000.
Nice.
And that's not been struck down by any of these judicial decisions at this point. So that has a huge impact, you know, first and foremost on 60,000 refugees who've been through a vetting process or are in that vetting process. And we're expecting to come to the United States this year, in most cases actually to be reunited with family who are already here. And unfortunately, those individuals will not be able to come at this point. So for us at World Relief, that's really sad. We have the hard job of telling family members here that their relatives who've been in a process that for many cases has lasted years of screening and vetting, often, you know, more than a decade since they left their country of origin, that they're probably not going to be able to come and be with their family members here, and they're going to have to spend at least another year in a refugee camp or living in a very desperate urban situation as a refugee. So, we're very much focused on the human angle of this and the effect that it has on families, and it also limits the ability of our ministry, because our ministry is to empower churches to serve refugees and to welcome them as they arrive. There will just be very few newly arrived refugees. We continue to work with churches to serve those already here, certainly, and to serve refugees outside the United States. It's another big part of our ministry. But there will be very, very few arriving in the next several months, because of that 50,000 cap, there's already been 38,000 in the fiscal year that began October 1st. So in the next 6 months or so, nationally, there will be less than 12,000 additional refugees arriving.
Okay, so help paint the picture as to who these refugees are and what are some of the risks and benefits of receiving them. It sounds like, from what you say, a lot of these refugees are already coming back to their families. So that's a good thing. But what about some of the others that aren't coming back to families?
Sure. I mean, so by definition, a refugee is someone who the U.S. government has determined has fled their country because of a well-founded fear of persecution.
Okay.
Specifically because of their faith or their nationality, their political opinion, their social group, or a political belief. So there's literally millions of those people in the world. There's about 21 million people who are legally designated as refugees. Again, the U.S. only resettles a very small percentage of those. Right now the debate is if it should be 0.5%, which it was last year, roughly, or less than 0.25%. But most of those people, like anyone else, if you or I were fleeing for our lives, they're looking for a safe place to be. And often that second country they've fled to is also unsafe or is in a situation of economic situation where they're living in a camp setting that they're not allowed to leave. So those few who are allowed to the United States are always very, very grateful for the opportunity. Again, a little bit more than half of them are coming to be reunited to relatives who are already in the United States. Even those who are not coming to family, they're looking for that same freedom and protection from harm. And they are very carefully vetted. So I think a lot of people are concerned right now about, well, how do we know about the security of these people coming in? There's been a lot of competing claims out there in media and that sort of thing. I think the most important thing to know is that we do have, our government has a really thorough vetting process in place already. The process that usually takes between 18 months and 2 years to complete, just for that small percentage who get considered for resettlement to the U.S. And since 1980, when the Refugee Act was passed, there's been about 3 million refugees who've come to the United States. A grand total of zero of them has ever taken an American life in a terrorist attack. So that's a pretty great record.
I like that statistic.
Can we promise nothing bad could ever happen? No. Though I tell people I'm probably far more likely to die getting into a car accident driving my refugee friends to the grocery store than I am from them trying to harm me. I mean, just statistically, that's absolutely true. And again, for us as a Christian organization, our fundamental foundation on this is not what's going to keep me most safe, though we do think it's safe. Our primary concern is how do we love our neighbors? And we think biblically that these people fit into that category of our neighbors. They fit into that category of uniquely vulnerable people whom God expresses a real concern for throughout the scriptures. And so we want to do all we can to welcome them.
Matt, I'm curious because I'm sure a lot of this is unfounded or we have distorted fears, but we obviously want to balance compassion and security. But we also want to love our neighbors as ourselves and reach out to the people who are suffering and in need and take them in and love them and care for the stranger and all that. So that's kind of the loaded question I'm going to ask you to answer when we come back from a little break. I'm talking to Matt Sorens from World Relief, and we will be back in just a minute. Seventeen minutes after the hour, I'm talking to Matt Sorens today from World Relief. And the refugee issue crisis is a big one. It's a really big one. And I, right before we went to a little break, I asked Matt about trying to balance compassion and security that we all feel. And sometimes we hear news reports that makes refugees sound like scary people. They're not necessarily scary people, are they, Matt?
Well, not in my experience, certainly.
Yeah.
I mean, I think your question is a very legitimate one. It's a God-ordained role of our government to protect the security of our country, and it's also, I think, in our best interest and part of our national character to be compassionate. And certainly, for those of us who are Christians, something that we are mandated to be. But I think it's a false choice to present it as should we choose compassion or choose security. Again, we've been doing both for many, many years.
Right.
We've been resettling refugees since the late 1970s. And certainly our security protocols have gotten much stricter, especially after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back before the Refugee Act, there was one terrorist attack in the United States in the 1970s where a Cuban terrorist did take the life of an American before we had our current system in place. But again, that's a pretty long ways to go back before I was actually born to find a case where a refugee committed an act of terrorism that took an American life. And with that, the odds of being killed by a refugee turned terrorist for the average American are 1 in 3.6 billion, according to the Cato Institute, which is, I'm willing to take those odds.
Yeah, right.
I take much, the odds of me dying in some other way, even by just from homicide from some other source, are far, far higher. And I'm willing to accept those odds because I think it's part of living out my faith and loving my neighbor. Again, I've lived in a neighborhood for, about 8 years where most of my neighbors are refugees. So I've got neighbors from Congo, from Burma, from Bhutan, from Iran, from Somalia, from Sudan, South Sudan, all parts of the world. And they've been an incredible blessing to me. Their family is a lot like my family, who've had very different life experiences, much, much more difficult life experiences, who just want to provide for their families, who want to work. They work harder, frankly, than I do. A lot of them are working working shifts that are working through the middle of the night, and then they come and go back to the English classes or other things. And I think it also gets lost that a lot of these people are persecuted Christians. There's actually been more Christians who've come to the United States as refugees in the past 10 years than there have been Muslims or those of any other religious background.
Mm-hmm.
And if we close our doors on refugees, we're closing our doors on the persecuted church as well.
Exactly. Now, Matt, I remember how carefully vetted I was when I tried to get my first Blockbusters card. So I don't mind getting vetted, and I think our vetting process is important, an important step. But receiving the refugees and loving them, meeting them where they're at, how are churches doing in terms of having relationships with these refugees? And do you have some great stories for me? Because I love stories.
Yeah, churches are at the heart of our ministry. Our ministry at World Relief is not to resettle refugees or integrate immigrants. It's to empower local churches to serve the vulnerable. And so we do that in about 20, 25 locations around the United States, including in the Twin Cities there through Arrive Ministries and in various other parts of the country as well. And we work with churches in what we call them different things in different parts of the country, but like a good neighbor team or a refugee life team that will basically be a small group from a church that comes together. Often it's a small group that's already meeting to study the Bible or whatever. And they say, we're going to come alongside this one particular family, and we're going to usually be there at the airport as they arrive. We're going to help set up their apartment. And then we're just going to commit to being their friends for at least the first 6 months to a year that they're in the country. And our hope is that after that initial period that they've committed to, that refugee family doesn't need a lot. We're really trying to encourage self-sufficiency in terms of helping that refugee family find work, be able to pay their own rent. But that beyond that point, there's just a mutual long-term friendship that sometimes goes right on into eternity. And we've seen that happen, again, all over the country. That's our model for how we welcome refugees. That'll shift a little bit with so few refugees arriving right now. Frankly, we don't have enough refugees arriving for every church that wants to meet them at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have people who've maybe been here for a few months or even a year who we didn't have a church team for when they first arrived who we could connect now. So we still have lots of opportunities for local churches to engage.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have a story in your own neighborhood that you can share? Because it sounds like you were in the middle of it. And this is the kind of challenging environment that I don't know if many of us are in, but you're in the middle of it. And I love hearing firsthand stories of neighbors that you've connected with and people
sure.
whose lives you've been able to touch or lead to Christ. Those are really exciting stories.
Yeah, you know, one of my favorite stories, and I have many, is probably 5 or 6 years ago. There was a couple, there's a woman who arrived in our neighborhood from East Africa with three kids, and she was 8 months pregnant. And she actually didn't come through the refugee program. She came on a tourist visa and then was seeking asylum, which basically means she was lucky enough to have a tourist visa, but then she's trying to get refugee status once she's already here, get asylum status. But as a result, World Relief didn't know she was there, and, you know, she just kind of showed up in our neighborhood. And we realized pretty quickly, my wife and I just gotten married, that she didn't really know anyone. They didn't have almost anything. She's 8 months pregnant. So we befriended them the best we could. My wife speaks their language better than I do. My wife was there at the hospital when that baby was born. We helped get the kids into school. We put up a Facebook message and said, hey, can anyone help provide some furniture, some beds even? They didn't have any beds to sleep on. And over time, that asylum claim got approved so the mom could get a job. And in fact, the oldest daughter, while finishing high school, got a job. Their son was part of a Bible study I led, and I got to be behind him as he was baptized at our church. And over time, they didn't need a lot of help anymore. They were just good friends. And then after about 2 years, their father and husband showed up. And it's a long story why he couldn't come in the first place. It goes back to the persecution they were fleeing. But I got to be there at O'Hare Airport as he met his two-year-old daughter for the first time. So it's just one of the most powerful moments that I've experienced of being there and seeing him meet his daughter. And then hopefully we were a blessing to them, but they were also such a blessing and continue to be a blessing to us. I mean, at one point they were over at our house for dinner and they asked my wife and I, so when are you guys going to have kids? And that's probably not a polite thing to ask in the United States.
You think?
But they're not from here.
Right.
And the reality is we've been trying to have kids for kind of a long time at that point and it hadn't happened. And we explained that and asked them to pray for us and they said they'd pray for us. And it was only a few months later we got to break to them the news that my wife was pregnant. And I'll never forget that moment. They literally, there's like a few seconds delay of a language gap.
Yeah.
But the moment they really understood what we were saying, they fell down on their, like prostrate on the ground in their kitchen. It was like a Pentecostal worship service as they're shouting all sorts of Yesus and Alleluias. And they went on to tell us that they'd been getting up early every Thursday and fasting all day on Thursdays and praying that God would bless us with a child. And I have no doubt that our daughter Zipporah is an answer to their prayers. And I suppose to our prayers, but mostly to theirs because I wasn't doing a lot of fasting and praying all day on Thursday. And so that's, I think we sometimes forget what an incredible blessing refugees can be to us as well. Again, many of them very strong believers who, in this case, they had fled situations that are horrific. They learned to rely on God in prayer and, frankly, had more faith in God answering their prayers than I did.
It's an unbelievable story, Matt. I just love it. It's so heartwarming. And I love the start of the story when you said she arrived here from East Africa and didn't know anybody. I'm thinking, sounds like me, if I landed in East Africa, I wouldn't know anybody either. And yet she's now at a point where she's involved in the community. She has a job. She's connected to her family. She's meeting people like you and your wife, and you're praying. She's getting up on Thursdays fasting and praying for you. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. That's unbelievable.
And they're doing great now. I mean, their oldest daughter's in graduate school. She was, in high school when they arrived.
Yeah.
Their son, who I got to see baptized, is a student over at Wheaton College, where I was a student, doing really, really well. So they've really integrated really well into the community, and I think that's a very typical story, actually.
Okay, and I don't think they deserve to be doing better than me, and they certainly are. So that's a great story, and I so appreciate, Matt, the update, and thank you for telling us again and reminding us that we need to always be looking for opportunities to reach out our hand to friendship. I think Billy Graham said, imitating Christ is opening the door to friendship, and you did that, and that story was great. Thank you so much, Matt.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to be here.
Yep, talk to you again. 26 minutes after the hour. Coming up next, we're going to have some news, and then Kim Cotola is going to bring us up to speed on all the pro-life news. Be back in a minute. Minutes after the hour. Good morning. Bill Arnold here. Just up after the news break, we're going to have Kim Cotola on the line, and she's going to give us the latest news on the pro-life world, and she is always such a delight to have on the show. We'll be back in just a minute. Minutes after the hour. We all have a purpose and a calling on our life. Pastor and author Lee Cummings explains what it means to be in that calling.
You were created for so much more. God has hardwired your soul and your spirit and designed you intricately. Before you ever took your first breath, God placed you where he placed you, as he placed you. You're here for a mission, and nothing else is ever going to satisfy. It might numb, it might anesthetize for a moment, but you will never truly feel alive until you know God and you are making him known and you are standing square in the middle of his will for your life. And I'll tell you what, God's will never be far from lost people. So when you're tempted to try and dull the pain with some more social media, watching another movie, pursuit of other things that this world says will satisfy, let me just tell you, that's all junk food. The only thing that will satisfy you, Jesus called it, my bread is to do the will of my Father. That's what you were created for.
He wasn't bashing junk food there, was he? Oh, my goodness. You can find that full interview at our website at myfaithradio.com. Coming up, 5 fast facts on the pro-life news this week. That's with Kim Cotola. We'll be back in just a minute.
Support your local church. Sound trite? It's not. This is Jim Garlow. The local church is under attack like never before. I'm talking about churches that are Bible-based. Churches taking a stand in a culture that rejects Christ and the Bible. Imagine what our life, our world, would be like without the contribution churches make to society and culture, to our families and neighbors. Many people live today in a culture of advantages which have been formed by Christian values. Some have even died for those values. It's easy to criticize the church for not being relevant. That may be true in some cases, but it's mostly just an excuse to opt out, to sit on the sidelines. Be part of your local church, a Bible-believing church. A part of what's taking place in communities all across the country by people committing to supporting and encouraging Bible-based churches. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Minutes after the hour, you know, it is Happy News Day because it is March 16th. So that'd be 316. How about connecting those dots? Kim, what do you think about that?
I like that a lot. I like it a lot.
It's a good day to refresh your old memory verse of John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he
gave his only son, that whoever believes should have an eternal life and not perish.
Awesome. So we've got some news on the pro-life
front.
Front, yes. I was trying to look for
Hi,
that
Bill.
Word.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yes.
I
was getting tongue-tied over. It was this first story from this female Texas legislator, and I'm thinking, how do I get around this story? How do we not talk about this? I say we go to the next one, which is about what's going on in Hawaii. Unless you have a way of talking about it.
Well, I hesitated to include it because, Texas State Representative, I'll do this, Bill. Texas State Representative.
You leave me out of this.
Jessica Farrar crafted a satirical bill, and it's meant to reflect what her view is, that regulating abortion is a needless intrusion into women's lives. So she proposes intruding on men in, a parallel fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So, Texas is one of the states that has a woman's right to know law, which says you can't do an abortion without giving a woman informed consent. So her bill is called a man's right to know. And it proposes that men would have to wait 24 hours before getting a Viagra prescription. They'd have to wait 24 hours before getting a vasectomy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, and that's because Texas requires a woman to see an ultrasound and then go home and think about whether she still wants the abortion now that she's fully informed that she's carrying a new life. Excuse me, that is not a parallel to getting a vasectomy.
No, not at all.
So there's that. But then she took it even further into, of course, I don't know why the vulgarity thing. I don't know why the vulgarity thing.
They're good at that, though. They're very good at that.
So I was talking with my husband about this last night, and I said, well, how can we talk about this on the radio in a way that's not vulgar or embarrassing? And so I'm choosing the word solo sex.
Okay.
The phrase. So she proposed in her bill that any man who engages in solo sex would be charged with a $100 fine for perpetrating an act against an unborn child and failing to protect the sanctity of life. Okay, so what she's saying here is the old fallacy that since sperm and egg are alive, solo sex would be killing them, just like abortion is killing an embryo. But that's it's a logical fallacy.
Well, sperm is not a child.
Exactly. When sperm and egg unite, a new organism is formed. Sperm and egg are cells, not organisms. Organisms are self-sustaining that develop through their own mechanisms. And so it's basic biology, which one of her fellow legislators pointed out to her, Tony Tinderholt, said, consider taking a high school biology class before filing another bill on the matter. It's an old fallacy, though, and you hear it a lot at the street level of, you know, conversations about abortion.
No,
an embryo is not a human being. Sperm and egg are alive, too, so, you know, and then they'll say all kinds of things about how God's a murderer since, you know, sperm die. No, no, and no. Here it is, Embryology 101, once more. At conception, there is a distinct, living, whole human being.
Yes.
The embryo is a human life. And either that is someone worthy of equal protection by virtue of being a human being and having equal human rights, or there's no such thing as equal rights. So her bill, again, she didn't intend it to pass. She intended to be satirical, but the Washington Post, Vogue magazine, all sorts of, you know, serious and respected news outlets and media have picked up the story. And so I thought we ought to at least talk about it and say she's confused.
All right. Let's get on a plane and go to Hawaii here for a minute where we can enjoy the sights and sounds and then talk about what's going on over there.
Well, Hawaii became the latest state to try to force pregnancy centers to refer for abortions. There is a bill in the legislature at Hawaii. And this has been overturned. Other places where it has been enacted, including Maryland, the city of Austin, Texas, the state of New York, or maybe it was New York City. I think it was in Manhattan in New York City. Right now, there are cases pending in California and Illinois. That case in California is probably going to go all the way to the Supreme Court. It's a free speech issue. Pregnancy centers stand against abortion, but you see what, and this kind of ties into Representative Farrar's bill, because what they're attempting to do is to say, well, if you're a pregnancy center, you need to give people completely informed consent, which is, you know, you can have an abortion, and here's where you can go to have it while they're counseling women to not have abortions, which is, you know, that is not their mandate.
Right.
That is not their mandate. And so, By requiring providers to tell women what is going to happen in an abortion and what is actually involved with the bodily integrity of their babies is a very different thing than saying those who are trying to support women to carry a pregnancy forward must be compelled to tell them, oh, by the way, you can have an abortion and here's where you can go for it. So I don't think the Hawaii measure will stand. But more states are being persuaded to do this by the big abortion lobby bill. We'll see how it goes in Hawaii.
Now, there was an Australian dad that had a pretty encouraging ad, but it was deemed a little bit too political. Tell us about that.
Well, he's I love this guy. So we have it posted at cradlemyheart.org. The video is on YouTube, and it's part of the notbornyet.com campaign in Australia. So he's in his truck. He's a tradie, as they call him in Australia. He's some kind of, an electrician or something. Anyway, so he says, yeah, we were young when my wife got pregnant, and I didn't know how I was going to cope. Well, 17 years later, when we had our seventh child, I guess I've coped pretty well, is the essence of his message. And, he goes from moving out in his truck with his toolbox into his kitchen where the happy family is gathered around. And the final shot is all of them holding an ultrasound of the new baby.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty dear.
It's very sweet.
It's very sweet.
Yes.
But no, the people who want abortion rights completely protected and upheld deemed that this was a political ad because it was trying to influence people on pregnancy decisions. And apparently there's some kind of a communications regulation rule in Australia that says you have to have disclosure as to who the sponsoring organization is. Well, apparently that website, Not Born Yet, wasn't good enough for them. It leads right to Emily's Voice, the pro-life organization that sponsored it. So, it's just another example of political correctness. And I really, after the ad was pulled, Emily's Voice CEO, Paul O'Rourke, gave a great response. And he said, look, why is it taboo to say there's a better choice or there's another choice? Why can't we talk about the fact that some families are very happy having not chosen abortion? And political speech has to do with candidates, has to do with laws, has to do with legislation. Winning hearts and minds is not political. Winning hearts and minds is called persuasion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that, comments are free.
Right.
We're all free to comment and
yeah.
to advance an opinion. And really, this is the way persuasion happens, Bill. It's a prolonged campaign over a long period of time using concrete messaging and hostile to neutral sources. And so, this ad perfectly does that. It says, look, we thought about abortion. We chose life. And we need to just continue making that message available to people. And, I was reading in my devotions this morning, Psalms 2, that when the nations align themselves against God, it says God laughs.
Hmm.
There are huge forces aligned against life and choosing life and upholding pregnant women to be able to see a pregnancy through. And it can be very dismaying to us. It can be easy to lose heart and think that, the battle is being lost day by day. But we've got to take heart. And we have to stand up for what's right. And blessed are those who take refuge in him, it says in Psalms 2. God is being patient to bring some to repentance in the midst of all the children's lives who are being lost. And we have to keep our eye on that.
Yeah, sure. Well said, Kim. All right, when we come back, the song Girls Just Want to Have Fun. Here's one of the best taglines ever. Girls just want to be born. Be back more with Kim Cotola from Cradle My Heart Radio in just a minute. Okay, thanks for listening this morning. I really mean that. 49 minutes after the hour, and I'm on the studio line with Kim Cotola from Cradle My Heart Radio, and I'm looking at some of these numbers, Kim, and I think I read something to the effect that 160 million girls in Asia received the death sentence based because they were eliminated based on their sex, simply because they were not boys, so they were aborted.
Mm. The International Women's Day was last, it's not yet a week gone,
mm-hmm.
and of course it's moved off the headlines, and that fact remains. And, it's the fallout from sex selection abortion around the world is something that really nobody can fully measure it, Bill. One of the other statistics in this piece you referenced before the break, Girls Just Want to Be Born, from the Witherspoon Institute, 590 women a day ended their own lives in 2012 in China. Why? Well, the search and destroy mission, as they put it, the global war against baby girls, means that many of these women were forcibly aborted. And in China, when that happens, they cruelly will leave. They'll do it late term because, you know, a woman may not have the means to buy her way out of the two-child policy now, formerly the one-child policy. And if she can't do that, she'll just carry until it's obvious that she's pregnant. Then the state will take her, forcibly abort that pregnancy, and force her to take her deceased baby and deal with the remains. Mm. And for a woman who's too poor to buy the certificate, it's absolutely horrid.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't tell me that there's not a correlation between that and the high suicide rate for women in China right
mm-hmm.
now. I mean, even if it didn't happen to you, you know it's happening. Maybe it happened to your sister, your friend.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the fact that women in the United States who call themselves feminists have been silent on this and have abided with it is a huge scandal. I can't for the life of me understand why, Bill.
Mm-hmm. Kim, are there any sex-selective abortion laws in the U.S.?
Yeah, well, there are seven states that do prohibit sex-selection abortion. Again, when legislators have proposed these measures, people like Jessica Farrar will say, well, you're just being intrusive. That's not happening. Women, you know, here's the slogan, Bill. We need to get on board with this. And Tim Kaine rolled it out during the presidential and vice presidential debates last year. Trust women.
Hmm.
Right? None of your business.
Mm-hmm.
Trust women. And so the narrative is that anybody who wants to protect children before their birth is misogynist and doesn't trust women. Right?
Right.
And so no. The problem here is that sex selection isn't as prevalent in the U.S. because in China and in the developing world, in India, you know, there are family costs to having girls. And there is a family benefit to having boys. And it's a complicated cultural thing that doesn't really replicate here in the U.S. But there are still families that I think would do that if given the option. And it's wrong in every case. The societal implications are huge. Gender-based violence
mm-hmm.
has hugely gone up in countries where there are too many men. And so I don't know that it's going to be as much of an issue here in the U.S., but wow, with people protesting Trump, you know, Sheryl Sandberg, again, we talked about this before, Bill, gave $1 million to Planned Parenthood for international abortion care and reproductive health. She said she wants to reduce the numbers of abortions. But, you know, Sheryl, what are you doing to help the women who are being killed before they can be born in these countries?
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing to help these women lean into their very lives,
mm-hmm.
much less careers and their full development as people?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Canada's got some interesting abortion news.
Well, playing into the, you know, the international story. So we heard about the She Decides campaign. The Dutch started off with, I don't know, 10 million, I think, trying to replace the 600 million that the U.S. withdrew from funding of abortions abroad when President Trump came into office and signed that executive order. Well, Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau, said he's going to cover the whole nut, Bill, $650 million from Canada for reproductive health, including abortion worldwide. And, you know, some were looking at the fine print and they said, well, where's the money going to go? And he said, well, you know, in some cases, countries don't have legal abortion, which means they have unsafe abortions happening. And so we're going to press for legalization, which means what? You're going to go in and mount legal cases against sovereign governments that have banned abortion to try to make it legal?
Mm.
This is Canada's idea of saving the world, apparently.
Yeah.
And, you know, the charges of imperialism have come loudly.
Yes, they have.
And I rightly so, I think. In particular, Canadian Cardinal Thomas Collins of Toronto said this is arrogant and exploitation of those in need of real care And he said, you know, think of how many schools and hospitals and truly beneficial institutions could be built with $650 million versus the tearing down of the next generation through abortion.
Mm-hmm. Kim, we just have about a minute left, but there's fetal tissue issues in Wisconsin. Tell us about that real quickly.
The main thing we need to know about this bill is that under the radar, the Congress released a report on fetal tissue research at the end of last year. And it was almost 500 pages looking at exactly what has been going on with fetal tissue research and proposing some recommendations for, you know, making this a truly ethical field of research. Well, so some people in Wisconsin said, let's go ahead and enact these recommendations from Congress. And, of course, there are researchers who are pushing back. And I urge you to check that out on our blog today, because there are some links to things we really need to know. The main thing being that the Senate panel found in nearly 100 years of research using human fetal tissue, not a single clinical treatment has been developed from human fetal tissue. And it's an important report and one that I think it deserves more attention than it's gotten.
Mm-hmm. Kim, every time you talk, I listen.
Thank you, Bill.
It's a very simple formula that works every week. You talk, I listen. Thank you so much. I'll talk to you next week.
Have a great day.
Thanks. It's 56 minutes after the hour. Good morning, everybody. I hope your day is starting off good. Thank you for being with us today. We're going to be right back. Fifty-seven minutes after the hour, it is Good News Day because it's March 16th, and of course that would be 3:16. So let's look back at John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. What a great day to just think about that verse all day long. All right, and when we come back, we're going to talk about what's going on with law enforcement, the complexities and challenges in the life of people involved in law enforcement. And we're going to talk to Pastor Larry Zeisman from Faith Community Church in Hudson, Wisconsin. So we'll be back in just a minute.
Thank you for listening to this conversation from Faith Radio Mornings. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings. Also, take a moment to subscribe to this podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a show.